Washington, this is VOA News. Fighting breaks out in Ukraine, a deadly car bomb blast in Nigeria. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. Fighting broke out today around a rebel-held city in eastern Ukraine as Ukrainian forces began a military operation against pro-Russian separatists. Ukrainian Interior Minister Arsen Avakov says the rebels shot at two Ukrainian helicopters during an assault on the city of Slavyansk, killing two pilots. Avakov said on his Facebook page that Ukraine is demanding the rebels free their hostages, lay down their weapons, vacate buildings they have seized, and restore the municipal infrastructure. In Moscow, Russian President Vladimir Putin's spokesman said Ukraine's offensive today delivered a final blow to a faltering peace agreement aimed at defusing the crisis in Ukraine. Mr. Putin on Thursday demanded that Ukraine withdraw all military personnel from the troubled region near the Russian border. For more on this story, visit our website, voanews.com. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Juba, where he is trying to arrange face-to-face talks between South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and his former vice president, now rebel leader Riek Machar. VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns reports from South Sudan. Kerry is trying to help end violence that has displaced hundreds of thousands of civilians and now threatens widespread famine.
Secretary Kerry and President Kiir met for more than an hour Friday to plan for projected peace talks in the Ethiopian capital next week. The talks would include Mr. Machar, with whom Kerry said he will speak again by telephone.
This meeting of Riek Machar and President Kiir is critical to the ability to be able to really engage in a serious way as to how the cessation of hostilities agreement will now once and for all really be implemented.
The most serious fighting here began in late December, soon after the Kiir government accused Mr. Machar of trying to seize power. Scott Stearns, VOA News, Juba.
A car bomb in Nigeria has killed at least 18 people at a bus terminal on the outskirts of the capital, Abuja. Police say dozens of people were wounded late Thursday in the blast. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack. Nigeria is planning to host the World Economic Forum on Africa next week. President Goodluck Jonathan has promised extraordinary security measures for the meeting. Syrian state media say car bombings in two villages in the province of Hama have killed 18 people, including 11 children. State television said 50 people were injured in the attacks, which occurred in the towns of Jibrin and Humairi. The villages are under government control and consist primarily of citizens belonging to the Alawite sect of President Bashar al-Assad. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights confirmed the attack, but its contacts said that 15 people were killed. No one has claimed responsibility for the bombings. Authorities in South Korea's capital, Seoul, say a subway train has crashed into another train, injuring about 200 people, none seriously. Officials said today's accident occurred near Sangwon-simni Station in the east of the city. One of the cars derailed when a train crashed into the back of another that had stopped at a station. Officials said the crash was likely due to a signal failure and the two subway cars had derailed. Around 1,000 people were evacuated. Most passengers had minor cuts, bruises, and one person suffered a fracture. Indian officials say militants have killed 10 people in the northeastern state of Assam. Authorities say the killings took place in two incidents late Thursday. The insurgents opened fire on two houses in Kokrajhar district, killing 7 people. In the Doksa district, militants killed 3. Officials say rebels from the National Democratic Front of Bodoland are responsible for the attacks. A suicide attack in northeastern Afghanistan has killed at least 13 people, including 6 policemen. The Taliban has claimed responsibility for the attackers detonating a vehicle packed with explosives at a busy checkpoint in Panjshir province Thursday. More than 20 people were wounded in the blast. Some critically, the 4 attackers were killed. I'm Dave DeForest. More news on the internet at voanews.com.
Thank you. Welcome to China Focus. I'm Jim Stevenson along with Sarah Williams.
U.S. President Barack Obama reaffirms his commitment to territorial integrity in East and Southeast Asia.
We look at China's controversial one-child policy.
And a Chinese comedian gets laughs from a Broadway audience. Hello and welcome to the first edition of the new show, China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams, and I hosted Crossroads Asia until just last week.
And I'm Jim Stevenson, the host of Daybreak Asia.
This show is a fresh look at stories about China. It will include both news and features on a range of topics about China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Chinese Americans.
We'd also like your input. You can email us your suggestions at voaasia@voanews.com.
But now let's look at some of the biggest news stories this week. Chinese President Xi Jinping called for action against terrorism this week following a bombing late Wednesday at a train station in the capital of Xinjiang. Three people died and 79 were wounded after attackers armed with knives and a bomb assailed passengers at the Urumqi South Station. The incident occurred as Mr. Xi ended a tour of the region. Beijing has blamed Muslim Uyghurs for several attacks in recent months. Critics of the government say the attacks have been spurred by Beijing's restrictions on Muslim life and policies. President Obama wrapped up his four-nation visit to Asia after stopping in Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, and the Philippines. In Tokyo, Mr. Obama reaffirmed the U.S.-Japan Defense Treaty, which he said extends to a chain of uninhabited islands in the East China Sea claimed by both Japan and China.
And let me reiterate that our treaty commitment to Japan's security is absolute, and Article 5 covers all territories under Japan's administration, including the Senkaku Islands.
Sarah, in the Philippines, Mr. Obama signed a new defense deal with Manila to expand the U.S. military presence in the Southeast Asian nation. And he said the new security agreement is not meant to control China, which is involved in a territorial dispute with the Philippines and the South China Sea.
VOA's Bill Ide in Beijing says few Chinese officials appeared convinced by Mr. Obama's assurances that Washington is not trying to halt China's peaceful rise.
President Barack Obama's Asia trip was widely seen as an effort to bolster security and economic ties in the region, leading some in Beijing to ask why he would not stop in China. Mr. Obama's vows of support for Japan and the Philippines led to widespread Chinese media coverage that the trip was instead aimed at stalling China's rise, despite his assurances to the contrary. Chinese commentaries on the president's trip have been quick to point out that Mr. Obama failed to negotiate a deal with Japan over a free trade pact for Pacific nations, and that he made little progress in inching the leaders of South Korea and Japan closer together. An opinion piece in the state-run English-language newspaper, The China Daily, accused the United States of ganging up with what it called Washington's troublemaking allies in the region. It also said the U.S. is presenting itself as a security threat to China. China's foreign ministry spokesman told reporters on Wednesday that Beijing has good reason to ask Washington to explain its new security pact with the Philippines and why that does not harm regional stability. During his trip, President Obama was careful to stress that the new agreement with the Philippines was mainly for military exercises related to and dealing with humanitarian relief. But some in the United States argue that too much focus is put on China and not enough on what benefits Washington's allies in the region are providing for America, says Clyde Prestowitz, a former U.S. trade negotiator and president of the Economic Strategy Institute.
Is China a threat to Japan and Korea and the Philippines and Malaysia? And I think one could say no. But even if it were, is it a threat to the U.S.? And I think the answer is definitely no. So if the answer is no, then why are we providing protection, or what benefit does the U.S. derive?
Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
We stop back here in the United States, where Rand Corporation China analyst Scott Harold said it would be an unfair expectation to say the Obama trip was aimed at bolstering bilateral ties between Washington and Beijing.
Clearly, many of those countries have concerns about China. Those are security concerns that are legitimate. The U.S. shares some of those concerns, but the notion that this was a trip that was all about Beijing reflects, I think, a viewpoint that is a little bit too China-centric. Everything that happens in Asia and everything that happens in the world does not happen because of China. And the U.S. president would be visiting these countries whether China existed or not. And in fact, the U.S. president is going to visit China this fall. So there will be an opportunity for the U.S. to restate its continued ambitions to work with a cooperative China that does not seek to arrogate all regional order unto itself, but that plays by the rules at that time. And I think that's what the Chinese have said that they want to do. So I think we have a continuing opportunity to do so.
China analyst Scott Harold of the Rand Corporation.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. A new study suggests China's economy has grown faster than previously thought, leading some analysts to predict that China could surpass the United States as the world's biggest economy by the end of the year. The figures were released Wednesday in a report by the International Comparison Program, which is part of the United Nations. The ICP evaluates economies based on purchasing power parity, or PPP, which estimates how much money can buy in different countries.
Using its latest data, which calculated living costs in 2011, the program said China's PPP was 20% higher than its previous estimate in 2005. And given China's rate of growth since then, many economists expect China to surpass the United States this year. In an article titled Crowning the Dragon, the Economist predicted on Wednesday that China will become the world's preeminent country by the end of 2014, and it noted that the American century ends and the Pacific century begins. The Financial Times and The Guardian also published similar predictions. This is China Focus on the Voice of America. A little bit later on our program, we'll look at American television programming in China. My co-host is Sarah Williams. Sarah, I know you're following this story closely. A two-week-old strike by thousands of workers at a shoe factory in southern China, which has now ended. A Taiwanese company runs the factory, and the workers have returned to their jobs.
The strike ended after the company agreed to meet some of the workers' demands on social insurance payments and wages. It's one of China's biggest labor actions in recent years. But China Labor Watch's Kevin Slayton describes some of the goals of the workers regarding the Yuyuan factory.
The main demand is social insurance, back pay. For years, workers weren't paid fully the insurance that they are granted by law. And the reasons for this are pretty complicated. Some of them involve the fact that the workers didn't want it themselves, but a policy change has made it in their interest to really want this because they can enjoy these benefits when they retire. The key here is that it's beneficial to workers and they want this back pay. At this point, workers know what their rights are and they're just waiting. They should be getting that back pay. Workers also made a later demand in the strike of a 30% raise in their wages. And this is a big demand. It'll be interesting to what comes out of negotiations. And I think that's another important part of this that we need to talk about. The union, when they sort of got involved in this, they listened to the workers' demands, they sort of collected these, analyzed them, put them in writing, and they said that we think the workers need to select their own representatives through a vote, through an election. This is a positive turn in events. So the union published something last week and said, well, we want to have this election and pick these representatives and then have these representatives carry out negotiations, figure out what sort of demands the workers are going to make and what the company is going to do to fulfill those demands. Negotiations should take place if the union carries out what it said it will. The main question is, and something that China Labor Watch hasn't been able to figure out yet, is the timeline. We don't exactly know how long it's going to be until this election takes place and then how negotiations are carried out. And that timeline can't be too long, because if it is, the workers may become impatient.
Slayton says an estimated 40,000 workers at the factory took part in the strike in Dongguan in southern Guangdong province. The factory makes shoes for major brands, some of them I'm sure you're familiar with, Adidas, Nike, and New Balance. Meanwhile, Chinese authorities detained a prominent labor activist, Lin Dong, and charged him with creating a public disturbance regarding his involvement in the protest.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams, along with Jim Stevenson. Well, this week, four American television shows available on Chinese websites were removed by government authorities. According to Chinese state media, the four shows are The Big Bang Theory, The Good Wife, NCIS, and The Practice.
Well, Sarah, I wonder which incarnation of NCIS they banned. There's so many of them that we get to watch here in the United States. You know, recently, American television shows have become very popular in China. The Walking Dead, The Vampire Diaries, House of Cards, they're all attracting a growing viewership.
I spoke with Syracuse University graduate student Xiaoyit Zhou, a former CCTV reporter, and I asked her why Chinese authorities made the decision to remove the four shows from streaming.
People speculate that there are mainly three possible reasons. First of all, that might be the content of the TV shows itself, because, for example, The Big Bang Theory, Sheldon Harris said that I like China because they know how to make people in line, and other satires on China. And secondly, might also because the process of the online broadcasting, or maybe the economic concerns, because the U.S. TV shows are really profitable in China. Before I came to the States, I watched it online in Chinese website, and I have to watch like 10, 20, and sometimes 40 seconds of advertisement before each episode. It's very profitable, so it's like a rent-seeking process from the government to those online streaming websites. The third speculation is that is the Chinese government's protection towards TV, domestic TV industry. There's no official reasons given, but there are mainly speculations.
But now, according to what you have found out, that apparently these shows, people will from now on still be able to see them, but they will not, they'll just have to sort of download them. They will not be able to see them, I think, when they're first streamed. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Actually, the U.S. TV shows started to enter Chinese market, I would say, 10 years ago. But we didn't have a lot of choice at that time. We only watched, like, Friends or Sex and City, and then we got, like, Prison Break and 24 Hours at that time. And all the TV shows were watched by downloading illegally from the website. And it was until 2010, the year of 2010, Sohu.com, one of China's largest streaming sites, officially purchased a copyright of Lost. And that is the first time that Chinese people can legally watch U.S. TV shows online. And from then on, the U.S. TV shows becomes really popular in China, especially among young students and white collars.
Why are American shows becoming so popular in China, do you think?
There are two things that people are really interested in entertainment shows, or especially in TV shows. One is sex, and the other is politics. And these two things cannot be talked in China at all.
That's Syracuse University graduate student Xiaoyue Zhou. You're listening to a brand new program. This is China Focus. I'm Jim Stevenson.
And I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a Chinese comedian takes Manhattan by storm. Recently, the Chinese Communist Plenum indicated that the country's one-child policy would be eased. If one parent is an only child, a couple would be permitted to have two children.
But an official with the National Health and Family Planning Commission actually said that the number of couples covered by the new policy is not very large across the country.
Now, this policy is highly controversial. Imposed in 1979, many Chinese now want it to be repealed. So what does this policy mean to China?
We spoke with two experts, Cheng Li, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution here in Washington, and Dudley Poston. He's a professor of sociology at Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas, about the policy.
Dr. Li, China is becoming a more age-heavy society. The Asian Development Bank projects by 2050, that is, over 23% of China's population is going to be in excess of age 65.
Right.
India is only about 14%, Indonesia about 18%. That really presents some dilemmas for China.
Absolutely. And also, by that time, really, one person takes care of six elderly. This is a very, very awkward system. without the social network, it will be a disaster.
You know, the other issue is this large, large number of bachelors that have already been born. I've estimated they've already been born 41 million boys who will not be able to find girls to marry. It's going to be even more difficult when those boys become adults and when their parents are then aging. So this is another issue, not just the single child, but the single child. Many of them are going to be men without wives.
It has almost become unintended birth control.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Dr. Poston, I know you've done some research on this, but what are some of the other social problems in regard to this when you have so many bachelors?
One big problem, we've done some statistical simulation of contracting HIV/AIDS. If the current rates continue with increases in sex workers in the country, there's several demographers and mathematicians have looked at this issue and have projected that in the next 10 or 15 years, there could be a HIV epidemic in China that could rival that of sub-Saharan Africa. Another implication could be if you're going to have 30, 40 million boys, men, who don't have wives, and they're all within about a 10 to 20 year age group, what's the country going to do with them? Will the country then revert back to more of an authoritarian regime? Will the country use those boys to help fight international battles? All kinds of interesting implications that we haven't really even begun to see, let alone think about.
Well, I'm less concerned about that. I think maybe this is a little bit too sensational. Of course, that we do not have too much reliable evidence, but we do know that the racial imbalance start to use or decline in the past few years. I think that with many factors and also with the market adjustment, actually, I would think that people will change their views about boys and girls. But I think there's another dimension we haven't discussed, is the little emperor phenomenon.
Uh-huh.
You know, this kind of very spoiled child when you become adult. These people may have difficulties to be sociable or to work together with others. And this is a phenomenon deserves much more attention, in my view, and because this is unique in human history.
I was just going to comment that we've done a lot of research here in Texas of 4,000 children in China over the past 10 or 15 years. And surprising, what we find is that, correct, there are a lot of little emperors, but there are proportionally a similar good number of what we would call good kids. The Chinese call them little dragons. In other words, proportionally, there are as many little emperors as little dragons in China as we see in the West. The one-child policy, the evidence is pretty clear, did not result in entirely all the single children being little emperors.
Our thanks to Chung Lee, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution here in Washington, and Dudley Poston, professor of sociology at Texas A&M University.
Sarah, the two experts that we've turned to clearly had very different opinions on this very controversial issue, and we didn't want to stop there. That's why we went out onto the streets of Washington and asked people right here in America if they're aware of such a policy in China and what they think.
I know a little about China's one-child policy. The environment and population control are big issues everywhere. Probably a lot of public health strategies they can employ other than mandating how many children a family can have, but, you know, complicated circumstances, complicated times.
Overpopulation is a big problem, but I feel like there's other ways to sort of be careful about population growth and how we use our resources without limiting people to one child.
I don't know much, but I don't think it's a good policy, at least for me, because I think each family should decide how many children they want to have.
I kind of understand that, like, it's for population, but the fact that they, like, seriously hurt some of the babies and the women, like, they'll make them have an abortion when the baby's, like, really, really old if they find out, which I think is really messed up.
I understand it's for, like, population control, but I think the way that they handle, like, especially female babies, I don't really agree with it.
I've read it was recently changed, if you will, to two children now, which I think is a great thing. I think the government realized that pretty soon the male-to-female ratio will be very unbalanced. So I think it's great that they are extending that, and I hope and I pray that will be disbanded, the whole policy.
I know that the rule has been in place for decades, I believe. It has to do with the population growth, if I'm not wrong. But I read recently that they are about to change the rule to allow families to have more than one. So if we take in consideration economic issues, maybe. But having two kids, I don't know if it is good. I don't think so.
Interesting. As you can imagine, people have very strong opinions about this controversial policy and the easing of the restrictions. Again, on Twitter, there's no shortage of comments. One, Chen Joy, claims this is probably the biggest headline of the year, while another, Wallace Sizz, wasn't so sure. Not sure what this will mean for the world, but we should watch.
Well, most of the comments vary greatly. One from Eck Tower says, of the expected change on easing the restrictions, China finally realizing the need for population growth. While another one, Samuel H. Lee, says, not so fast. Change to China's one-child policy is, in parentheses, almost no change at all.
Out of all the comments I've seen, I like this one, suddenly Mary. I guess that China finally realized that one is the loneliest number. Yeah, that was a song by Three Dog Night, I believe, a long, long time ago.
Yeah, here it is on my iPod. Let me dial that up.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do.
Okay, interesting. Well, let's not forget the large population of Chinese Americans residing in the U.S. Many of them came from China. Let's hear what they told us about the one-child policy.
I think it's every person's right to decide how many children they want to have. Also, I think it's devastating for Chinese economy. Before I came to this country, I more or less bought into the Chinese propaganda, saying that one child is better for the whole country. I've been here in this country for 20 years. My view has been changed dramatically because I've seen more. I have been exposed more. The more I think about it, the more strongly I'm against the one child policy.
Why set up the limitation? Bearing a child is a natural process for human beings. I know one reason is because of the population, but for me, it's not natural.
I think it's very necessary for China to control the population. There's really no other ways. Also, it changed a lot of older generations' opinion towards girls. When they can only have a girl, they have to accept this fact that all girls are also important.
I'm from that generation, and all my friends, classmates are all from that period of when China will only allow one child in big cities. Well, I felt like the sense of loneliness while growing up. I had a lot of stuffed animals with me, but I don't have any siblings to talk with. Now I'm grown up. I feel more responsibility or more burden toward taking care of my parents because I'm the only one in the family. No one can share this duty with me.
I heard nowadays if both sides of the parents are the one child in their family, so they can have the second baby. However, some of the couples, they don't really want the second baby because it costs a lot in China to raise a child. So they rather stay for the one baby and then they can offer the better environment for this baby.
As always, you're part of the program. Tell us what you think of the one-child policy. Are you the only child in the family? Do you agree with one of the Chinese Americans who said that she believed it was a good policy? Or do you side with the other one who thought that the policy should be repealed? You can write to us at voanews.com/ChinaFocus or email us at voaasia@voanews.com.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams, along with Jim Stevenson.
In New York City, Chinese comedian Guo Degong took part in a crosstalk program at the Beacon Theater. Crosstalk, known in Chinese as xiangsheng, includes storytelling, singing, and dialogues. Guo's tour is called Laughing Across North America and is also taking him to Los Angeles, Chicago, and later in the year to Canadian cities, Toronto and Vancouver.
Guo began the show by blowing his trumpet and making fun of his partner, Yu Shen.